Right. So picture this scenario for a second. You're an Australian CFO, maybe at a mid-tier logistics firm, and you are just trying to replace a mid-level management accountant.
Right, which sounds incredibly standard.
Exactly. I mean, the person resigned weeks ago, the budget is sitting right there, the work is definitely still there.
Yeah.
But instead of just going to market and hiring someone, your request is currently sitting on some digital desk in London or Chicago.
Oh, completely caught in this sprawling approval bottleneck.
Yes, you're suddenly competing for capital against a, I know, a multi-million pound software rollout in Europe. It's just wild.
It really is a remarkable shift. Welcome to the new reality of corporate hiring.
And that is exactly what we are unpacking today. So welcome to this deep dive.
Glad to be here.
Our mission over this session is to dissect this really fascinating market insight from a recent Byron Thomas recruitment report. It reveals this massive fundamental shift in how organizations are handling finance and accounting vacancies right now in 2026.
Yeah, and what makes this so compelling for you listening, whether you're an Australian CEO, a CFO, you sit on a board, or you're an HR leader, is that this isn't just an issue for the massive multinationals anymore.
Right, it's everywhere.
Exactly. It's fundamentally reshaping ASX-listed groups, and it's aggressively trickling down into the SME sector, too.
So, reading through the Byron Thomas recruitment report, the central premise seems to be that the default question has completely changed.
It has. The immediate response to a resignation is no longer, who should we hire?
Which is what it always used to be.
Spot on. Now, before you even get to look at a CV, you're forced to answer this barrage of existential questions, like, should this role even exist? Can the work be absorbed? Can our new AI tools just handle it?
I look at it this way. Trying to get a standard financial controller or like a payroll manager replaced right now, it feels a bit like trying to get a major capital expenditure approved just to fix a leaky pipe in the staff kitchen.
That is a brilliant analogy.
Right, because you just want to stop the water from ruining the floor. It's a very immediate operational problem.
Yeah.
But suddenly, you are forced to submit a comprehensive 10-page business case to a global committee, and your little plumbing fix is being weighed against strategic investments half a world away.
Every single operational replacement is suddenly competing for capital.
Exactly.
And I think that leaky pipe analogy captures the frustration local leaders are feeling perfectly. Your operational necessity is just colliding head-on with global strategic scrutiny.
So why is this happening now?
Well, to understand why your local hiring managers are suddenly subjected to this intense friction, we can't just look at the HR department.
Right, there's a bigger picture.
Exactly. We have to look at the macroeconomic pressure cooker that you and your fellow leaders are operating in. The bottleneck is a symptom of a much larger economic condition.
Let's break down that macro condition because the landscape in August 2026 is, frankly, it's pretty unforgiving.
It's brutal.
We have the Reserve Bank of Australia holding the cash rate at a highly restrictive 4.35%.
Which fundamentally alters the cost of capital.
Right, and domestic demand is moderating. Plus, when we look at the labor market data, job vacancies fell 2.1% in the quarter to May 2026.
And we really need to put that drop into historical context, you know?
Yeah, please do.
If you zoom out to the peak of the post-pandemic hiring frenzy, so, May 2022, current vacancies are down 30.3%.
Wow.
Yeah, that is not a minor correction. That is a systemic cooling of the labor market.
A 30% drop is an enormous withdrawal of demand. And yet the unemployment rate is sitting at 4.5%.
Which is still relatively tight.
Yeah. So the market has softened, but reading through the Byron Thomas recruitment market insight, the daily reality for a CFO hasn't actually become any simpler, has it?
Not at all.
The tension has actually increased.
It has, because the economic indicators are presenting this massive paradox.
How so?
Well, if we look at the sentiment on the ground, and the July 2026 AB Business Survey captures this perfectly, you see very weak business confidence. Conditions are sitting well below their long-run average.
So leaders are nervous about the horizon.
Right. But simultaneously, businesses are reporting that they're operating at a very high capacity. They are incredibly busy.
So you have this collision of low confidence but high operational velocity.
Yeah.
People are flat out, but the board is terrified to spend a single dollar.
Precisely. The RBA's own liaison program indicates that firms generally want to keep their headcount stable. They're taking a real wait-and-see approach to the economy.
Makes sense.
But more importantly, the mandate from the top is to do more with the exact same resources they already have. The era of just throwing headcount at a growth problem is completely over.
So when that finance vacancy suddenly appears, the default reaction from the executive committee is to interrogate the seat, not fill it.
Exactly.
Okay, but I want to challenge the underlying motive here on behalf of the operational leaders listening to this.
Oh, corporate.
When a global board demands a structural review every single time an accountant resigns, is that actually just a sophisticated disguise for rudimentary cost cutting?
I mean, it's entirely rational to suspect that.
Right. Like, are they just trying to save a bit of cash on the P&L to offset those massive 4.35% financing costs?
Let's be honest. Cash preservation is a massive factor. Capital is expensive right now, and top-line growth is pretty subdued in a lot of sectors.
Yeah.
But reducing this entirely to a simple cost-cutting exercise misses the deeper structural shift. It's actually about a fundamental change in expectations regarding productivity.
Okay, walk me through that.
Well, Australia has been battling weak productivity growth for years now. It's been a severe constraint on the economy's capacity.
It's real.
So boards and global executives are looking at their operations and realizing that simply maintaining the status quo just isn't enough anymore.
So they aren't just looking to save $120,000 salary.
No, they're actively hunting for ways to force the business to operate more efficiently. They've started to view a vacancy not as a problem that needs to be solved, but as this rare golden opportunity to force a structural upgrade.
Wow. So withholding approval is essentially a stress test. They are squeezing the department to see if they can survive without the headcount, hoping it forces innovation.
That is exactly the mechanism. It's forced adaptation. And this actually brings us to the most complex layer of this entire dynamic. Because it's not just the RBA's interest rates or a desire for productivity that's making executives hesitate. There is this pervasive, almost intoxicating new expectation in the boardroom that technology is finally ready to take the wheel.
Ah. Which brings us to artificial intelligence.
Exactly.
You really cannot sit in a boardroom or an executive offsite today without someone demanding to know how AI is going to revolutionize the P&L.
It's the only thing people want to talk about.
It is. And according to the Byron Thomas recruitment report, AI has entered almost every single headcount discussion.
Oh, absolutely.
There seems to be this prevailing assumption among global leaders that AI should currently be handling all the reconciliations, the anomaly detection, the cash flow forecasting, variance analysis, all of it.
Yep.
And they are using that assumption as a direct empirical justification to just reject replacement hires outright.
And this is where we really need to draw a very sharp line between technological perception and operational reality.
Right.
AI absolutely has transformative potential. I mean, any CFO ignoring it right now is bordering on professional negligence.
Yeah.
But treating the future potential of AI as proof that a specific, complex human role can be removed today is a massive operational mistake.
Because it's just not there yet.
Right. We have to clearly distinguish between AI's proven ability to remove isolated tasks versus its ability to remove entire roles.
Okay, but push back on this for a second.
Yeah.
If I am a CFO,
yep,
and I've just invested heavily in this massive enterprise AI tool, and the vendor promised me it will handle 40% of the data entry and basic reconciliation.
Standard sales pitch. Yeah.
Right. So I am absolutely going to look at that vacant management account role and think about cutting it to a part-time position. If the software does 40% of the work, why shouldn't I just effectively hire 60% of a person?
Because you are assuming the remaining 60% of the work stays exactly the same, just smaller in volume.
Doesn't it?
No, that is the fundamental trap. You can't just slice a human in half and expect the remaining capacity to function smoothly.
Why not?
Because implementing AI does not just absorb old work. It actually creates entirely new, highly complex work that requires intense human oversight.
Oh, okay. Break that down for me mechanically. What new work is being created that offsets the time saved on, say, data entry?
We're talking about exception management, system control, data quality assurance, governance.
Give me a practical example of that.
Okay, imagine your new AI system can now process 10,000 supplier invoices in 5 seconds.
Amazing. Massive reduction in manual data entry.
Huge. However, the AI is inevitably going to flag, let's say, 200 of those invoices as anomalies.
Okay.
Perhaps tax code is ambiguous, or the pricing doesn't match the purchase order perfectly, or a new supplier has an unrecognized format.
So the system just stops and asks for help.
Precisely. Now, who investigates those 200 anomalies? Who applies the nuanced commercial judgment to decide if a flagged variance is a system hallucination, a genuine supply chain failure, or just a temporary seasonal fluctuation in commodity prices?
Right. That has to be a human with real business context.
Exactly. You can automate a process, but you cannot automate accountability.
That's a great point.
If a statutory report is filed incorrectly because the AI hallucinated a data point or it misinterpreted a brand new tax ruling, the board cannot blame the software architecture.
The regulator doesn't care about your software.
Exactly. The CFO still signs off on it. The financial controller still owns the risk. You need highly capable, strategically minded people, not just to do the work, but to manage the outputs of the technology doing the work.
So if you cut the headcount purely based on task automation,
you leave a massive, dangerous vacuum of accountability.
I see. So AI acts kind of like a filter. It strips away all the high-volume, mundane tasks. But what it leaves behind is this highly concentrated block of high-risk, high-judgment work. And to manage that concentrated risk, you still need a whole person. Perhaps even a more qualified person than you needed before.
That is the reality on the ground, and it's entirely backed up by the research. The data paints a very different picture to the boardroom hype.
What does the data say?
Well, if you look at PwC Hay's 2026 AI jobs barometer, they found that highly AI-exposed organizations are actually growing their headcount, not slashing it.
Which feels completely counterintuitive if you only read the marketing brochures for these tools.
It does, but it aligns perfectly with that need for exception management we just talked about.
Right.
Furthermore, EY released some fascinating Australian CEO research recently. It showed that 44% of CEOs are prioritizing large-scale reskilling, and 41% are prioritizing role redesign to combine human and AI capability.
Okay.
But do you know how many placed reducing hiring in selected roles among their top priorities?
I'm guessing not many.
Only 20%.
Wow. That is a staggering gap between the narrative of AI replacing humans and the actual strategic execution by CEOs.
It really is. And McKinsey's 2025 Global AI Survey reinforced this exact point. They found a massive disconnect between the expectations of AI reducing headcount and the actual realized workforce changes.
So no one is actually firing people because of AI yet.
Right. The vast majority of respondents reported little to no actual headcount effect from AI in the previous 12 months.
So if those AI implementation answers don't exist yet in an organization like, if they don't know who owns the exceptions, who verifies the capacity that is supposedly released, or when the financial benefit actually hits the P&L, then as the Byron Thomas recruitment report notes, the organization doesn't actually have a workforce plan.
No, they don't.
It just has an aspiration.
An aspiration that is incredibly dangerous to base your immediate resource allocation on.
Right. Okay, let's look at this from another angle entirely.
Sure.
If AI isn't fully absorbing the workload yet, and the board is enforcing a headcount freeze anyway,
yeah,
surely something else must be shrinking the workload to justify this hesitation, right?
You would hope so.
Like, the actual regulatory or operational burden must be getting lighter.
I really wish I could say that was the case. But unfortunately, the exact opposite is happening. The workload for Australian finance teams is expanding rapidly and aggressively.
And this brings us to a phenomenon the report calls the compliance contradiction, which is just absolutely wild to me.
It's a huge issue.
Employers are challenging finance headcount. They are scrutinizing every single replacement at the exact historical moment when the compliance workload in Australia is exploding.
It is a perfect storm for finance leaders. The macroeconomic pressure to cut costs is colliding head-on with surging regulatory demands.
Let's look at the specifics of that, starting with the new payday super requirements that came into effect on the 1st of July, 2026.
Oh, that's a massive
one. Well, talk me through the mechanics of that, because that is a massive shift for payroll, right?
Huge. Previously, employers had significant leeway, often quarterly, to reconcile and remit superannuation contributions.
Right.
Under the new payday super rules, employers must calculate superannuation on qualifying earnings and ensure those contributions reach the employee funds within 7 business days after each payday.
7 days. That completely upends the old reconciliation cycles.
It compresses the entire process. It requires immense payroll accuracy, perfect funding timing, flawless systems integration with clearinghouses, and instant exception management when a payment inevitably bounces back due to a mismatched tax file number.
Because that happens all the time.
All the time. There is zero room for error now, and the financial penalties for missing that 7-day window are severe. And who manages that risk?
The finance and payroll team.
Exactly. It falls squarely on them.
And that's just superannuation. We haven't even touched on ASIC's mandatory climate reporting regime. The second reporting cohort for that also commenced on the 1st of July, 2026.
That is perhaps the largest shift in corporate reporting in a generation. Oh, absolutely. For affected organizations, sustainability reporting is no longer just a marketing exercise handled by the PR team. It is a strictly regulated financial disclosure now.
And what does that actually require from the finance team mechanically?
Well, it requires integrating operational data like scope 1, 2, and eventually scope 3 emissions, supply chain logistics, energy consumption, integrating all of that with financial systems.
That sounds incredibly complex.
It is. It requires building audit trails for non-financial data that are just as rigorous as your standard financial ledgers. It adds massive data gathering, governance, assurance, and disclosure demands.
And ultimately, who owns the integrity of the data going into the annual report?
The CFO and the finance team.
Unbelievable. And this is all sitting on top of existing tax laws, employment awards, privacy regulations, cybersecurity mandates, modern slavery reporting, and, you know, just your standard monthly financial reporting obligations.
Exactly. The Productivity Commission has actually been extremely direct about the cumulative effect of this.
What did they say?
They warn that accumulated regulation is literally slowing Australian business down. They cited a 0.6% fall in labor productivity in the March 2026 quarter.
Wow.
And they pointed specifically to the regulatory burden making day-to-day business activities harder and significantly more time-consuming.
And the OECD chimed in on this recently as well, didn't they?
They did. Their 2026 Australian Economic Survey explicitly flagged the complexity of our tax system and our heavy reliance on labor taxes. They recommended a reduction in administrative barriers just to free up corporate capacity.
Let me use an analogy here, because initially I thought this was like taking the engine out of a car right before a race.
Right.
But it's actually much worse than that. It is like you are managing a Formula One team.
Okay, I'm with you.
The pressure from the top to cut costs means you are telling your driver to go faster, navigate a much more complex track in the dark.
Yeah.
But you are refusing to replace the broken telemetry sensors on the car because you want to see if the driver can just make do without the data.
Oh, that's incredibly accurate.
You are flying blind at the exact moment you need the most control.
That is a brilliant way to frame it. The telemetry sensors are your management accountants, your financial controllers, your payroll managers.
Right.
They provide the data that keeps the car on the track. The practical contradiction here is just undeniable. The executive pressure to reduce finance costs is peaking at the exact historical moment when the legal necessity for control, visibility, and compliance is also peaking.
So let's explore what this means in practice for the listener. You have a frozen headcount due to macroeconomic pressure. You have unproven AI that isn't actually removing the need for human judgment. And you have surging complex compliance demands.
Yep.
When that seat stays empty because it's stuck in an approval bottleneck on a desk in New York, what actually happens to the work here in Australia?
This is the critical piece that distant decision makers, the ones looking purely at a spreadsheet, often miss completely.
Because they just see a saving.
Right. The savings they see on a monthly payroll report is a complete illusion. It's a mirage. Because the workload does not magically disappear just because the headcount is frozen. The work simply goes to one of five places.
Okay, walk me through those five outcomes. What is the real-world consequence?
First, the manager absorbs it. A highly paid, highly experienced financial controller steps down from their strategic role and gets right back into the weeds of processing journal entries and reconciling bank accounts.
Which is a terrible use of their time.
Exactly. Second, the remaining team members divide it up, stretching their own capacity to breaking point.
Burnout.
Yes. Third, you panic and hire a contractor or an external advisor to cover the gap, which is almost always significantly more expensive on a daily rate.
So you're actually spending more money.
Often, yes. Fourth, deadlines start to slip and the quality of the output plummets.
And the fifth.
The fifth is the most dangerous. The work just quietly stops being done entirely until a compliance disaster or a cash flow crisis exposes how vital it actually was.
That fifth one is terrifying. It's the silent accumulation of hidden risk.
Yes, it is.
But I want to focus on the non-obvious costs here. Because if I am a CEO listening to this, I already know that if I don't replace an accountant, the controller has to do the work.
Right.
What is the hidden cost that I am not seeing on my P&L?
The hidden cost is data degradation, particularly regarding those new AI tools we discussed earlier. AI models require pristine, perfectly classified data to function. If your management accountant isn't there to properly classify expenses, assign cost centers, or clean up the ledger, your data quality degrades.
Because no one's maintaining it.
Exactly. Suddenly, the multi-million pound AI system the board is so proud of starts generating flawed insights because it is learning from garbage data. By saving $100,000 on a headcount, you are undermining a $10 million technology investment.
That is a phenomenal point. You are starving the AI of the very thing it needs to function.
Exactly.
What about the human cost? What happens to the top performers who are forced to absorb the work?
You trigger burnout contagion. Your best people are usually the ones who absorb the extra work because they actually care about the quality.
Right.
But they will only tolerate that for so long. If your credit team is short-staffed, collections slow down, which actively extends your cash conversion cycle. You have cash tied up in receivables when capital is historically expensive. And when those overworked top performers inevitably resign, you don't just have one vacancy, you have three.
It's a classic case of deferred maintenance. It is like deciding not to service the critical factory machinery just to save a few thousand dollars this quarter.
Yep.
You looked like a genius on the Q3 spreadsheet, but when the machine completely seizes up in Q4 and halts the entire production line, you're spending 10 times that amount to fix it. You're saving a dollar today to spend $10 fixing a compliance breach or a retention crisis tomorrow.
The unbudgeted costs are always more severe than the planned payroll expense. You trigger control failures, audit adjustments, and you completely stall your transformation projects because everyone is too busy just trying to keep the lights on.
So, realizing that doing nothing, just letting the role sit vacant indefinitely while waiting for a miracle, is actively toxic to the business. How do leaders actually break this deadlock?
That's the million-dollar question.
Right. If I am an HR leader or a CFO, how do I get past this bottleneck and construct a path forward?
They need to implement a disciplined framework. The entire conversation has to shift. They have to stop asking the defensive question, which is, can we avoid hiring?
Right.
And start asking the strategic question. What is the most efficient way to provide the capability the business actually requires to operate safely?
Okay.
The Byron Thomas Recruitment Market Insight outlines a very clear framework for this. It details four legitimate choices when a vacancy arises: replace, redesign, automate, or defer.
Let's dedicate some serious time to breaking these down, because this framework is the practical toolkit for our listeners.
Sure.
Option one is replace. When should a leader simply dig their heels in and fight for a straight, like-for-like replacement?
You advocate for a straight replacement when the mandate of the role is absolutely necessary, the workload is proven to be sustained, and crucially, the role carries accountability that cannot safely be distributed.
Give me an example of accountability that cannot be distributed.
Specialist tax compliance, payroll leadership, treasury management, or statutory reporting.
Right.
You cannot take the legal ownership of tax compliance and distribute it across three junior accountants who already have day jobs. You need a singular leader whose specific remit is managing that risk. If the role carries fiduciary or statutory weight, you replace it.
That makes perfect sense. Accountability is indivisible. Okay, option two is redesign. How does that work mechanically?
You choose to redesign when the fundamental work still exists, but the old job structure doesn't fit the new technological reality of business.
Okay, give me an example.
Let's say an accounts payable manager resigns. You have recently implemented an automated invoice processing system. Instead of hiring a traditional AP manager who focuses on managing manual data entry teams, you redesign the role into a, say, procure-to-pay systems and exception manager.
That's totally different skill set.
Exactly. You hire someone with a stronger systems background, someone who manages the AI exceptions and analyses supplier data, rather than someone who just supervises data entry.
But there is a massive trap here, isn't there? I can see a scenario where redesign just becomes corporate jargon for do more with less.
Oh, that is the ultimate warning attached to this option. Do not use redesign as a thinly veiled excuse to cram two full-time jobs into one attractive title just to appease the board's headcount target.
Right, the supermanager myth.
Exactly. You cannot call someone a finance supermanager, give them the workload of a financial controller and an IT systems analyst, and pay them for one job.
They'll just quit.
You will simply burn out the new hire in 6 months, and you will be right back in the approval bottleneck. The scope of the redesigned role has to be genuinely achievable, and the remuneration must reflect the expanded, more complex mandate.
Good advice. Okay, option three, automate. This is the one the boards love to demand.
You do.
When is it actually legitimate to choose this path?
You only choose to automate the vacancy away when the process is fully standardized, the underlying data is reliable, and a fully funded, proven technological solution is actually ready to deploy right now.
This is not a beta test.
You do not automate on a promise. You do not leave a seat empty because a software vendor promised a solution will be live in Q4.
I imagine the failure rate on automating too early is incredibly high.
It is catastrophic. KPMG released some excellent research in 2026, noting that technology requires intense governance, capability building, and operating model changes before it creates any dependable value. Mm-hmm. If you haven't mapped the processes, cleaned the data, and established who owns the governance of the automated system, you cannot automate the seat away. The technology must be functional before the human is removed.
Makes complete sense. Mm-hmm. And finally, option four, defer. When is it acceptable to just wait?
You only choose to defer a hire for genuinely temporary demand dips or if a major organizational restructure is genuinely imminent.
Yeah.
But if you choose to defer, it must have a hard review date and agreed risk limits. We will just manage for now is not a strategic workforce plan. It is a surrender.
You need boundaries.
You need tripwires. For example, we will defer this hire for 3 months, but if debtor days increase by more than 5 days, we immediately trigger the recruitment process.
That brings us to the ultimate hurdle. You have this logical framework. Mm-hmm. You know exactly whether you need to replace, redesign, automate, or defer. But how does a local HR leader or an Australian CFO actually communicate this effectively to a distant global decision maker? I'm picturing a global committee in London that has absolutely no understanding of the Australian regulatory environment.
They rarely do.
They just look at a spreadsheet row that reads, minus one employee cost equals plus profit. How do you argue against simple arithmetic?
You have to speak their language, which means building an airtight, heavily quantified commercial case. You cannot submit an emotional plea to restore the old organization chart because your team feels overworked.
They don't care about feelings.
Global committees do not respond to operational fatigue. They respond to commercial risk and return.
So how do you structure that commercial case?
You start by defining the tangible outcomes the role owns, not just the list of tasks it performs. You separate the recurring, mundane processing from the high-level, high-risk commercial judgment. You have to clearly show them the operating system that surrounds that cost.
Give me a practical script for that. How should a CFO phrase this to the board?
You quantify the true hidden cost of the vacancy. You don't just say, we are busy and stressed.
Right.
You say, holding this vacancy for the past month has cost us $30,000 in external contractor premiums. It has delayed our cash collections by an average of 8 days, tying up working capital at a 4.35% cash rate.
Oh, that's good.
And you follow up with, furthermore, without this dedicated resource, we are exposing the business to a high-risk rating of compliance failure under the new ASIC climate reporting regulations, which carries significant reputational and financial penalties.
Wow. So you translate the empty chair into a specific financial and risk metric.
Exactly. You honestly test the automation timelines, proving that technology cannot solve this specific problem today, and you present a clear, accountable decision. You force them to acknowledge what stops, what weakens, and what specific enterprise value that requested position protects.
Bringing all of this together, it seems the major takeaway from the Byron Thomas Recruitment Market Insight is that the approval bottleneck itself isn't inherently an evil construct.
No, it's not.
In a way, it stops lazy, automatic replacements and forces companies to rigorously evaluate their operating models. Scrutiny, when applied correctly, is actually good.
Scrutiny is essential for a healthy organization. The danger does not lie in the scrutiny itself.
Right.
The danger lies entirely in starting with the wrong question. If your default starting point is always the defensive posture of, how do we avoid this headcount? You are going to slowly but surely strangle your own operations.
So what's the right question?
The starting point must always be the strategic posture of, What capability does this business require to operate safely, compliantly, and competitively in the current market?
I want to leave you, our listeners, with a final thought to mull over as you navigate your own headcount discussions this week. We have spent a lot of time exploring the operational and compliance risks of holding a vacancy.
We have.
But I want you to consider the invisible strategic risk. If you are currently keeping a critical commercial finance role vacant just to save a few months' salary on the P&L, what is the invisible cost of the slower, less informed commercial decisions you are making today?
That's a great point.
Because while you are waiting for a global committee to approve the hiring of a crucial analyst, your competitors might already be executing on the market insights that your missing analyst should have been finding.
It is the ultimate question for a leader. Yeah. Are you inadvertently funding your competitors' speed and agility with your own hesitation?
It forces a completely different perspective on the savings of an empty chair, doesn't it? Do not let the leaky pipe turn into a structural collapse while you wait for distant committee approval.
Hear, hear.
Use the framework, build the commercial case, define the absolute capability you need, and force the decision. Thank you for joining us for this deep dive into the Byron Thomas Recruitment Market Insight.
It has been an absolute pleasure unpacking the mechanics of this with you.
We will catch you on the next deep dive. Keep asking the right questions.